Christine, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us here on The Daily. Now, to get us started, I guess to give us maybe an idea beyond what we would probably think of as a cliche, what gentrification generally looks like.
Yeah, well, it's all the things that you mentioned. So on the urban streetscape, you can see new bars, restaurants, you can see increasing property prices, you can see the influx of perhaps younger middle-class professional families moving in. And I suppose increasingly in Sydney, those people are Anglo-Australian, you know, professionals. And because of the extreme inflation of property prices in Sydney, you know, they are quite well-to-do. And the areas that they're moving into are, as you say, traditionally working-class areas. So in Sydney's inner city and inner west, you can see that that's been happening over many decades.
Well, you've been looking at some of the effects on schools in these areas. Can you run us through a little bit about how you went about your research?
Well, we chose a suburb in Sydney that has been undergoing rapid gentrification, and we basically looked at four primary schools in this suburb, and it's quite a large suburb, so we could compare different experiences, and we talked to principals and other staff at the school, as well as a whole bunch of parents at the schools, and we found some, I guess, talking to people is the way that you really get to know what's going on in these communities, mm-hmm. And we did find that there is this real divide in just one suburb. You know, sometimes you can walk between these schools in, you know, 10-15 minutes. They're that close together, but in terms of their profile, they couldn't be more different. So you've got, you know, the schools that the middle-class gentrifiers, you know, find desirable are the ones that they're really flocking to, you know, even if they might not necessarily live in that catchment area, they apply to go. And they're perhaps, you know, avoiding some of the other schools that are seen as, the word rough was used a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, you know, we find that to be like a euphemism for, well, the kids there don't look like our kids, and we're, you know, not that comfortable having those sorts of children mixing with our children.
Those kids are a little bit urban, as it were.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, even within the same suburb, you can see this kind of polarisation happening. And it's funny how people characterise the schools, because locals know exactly what's going on. You know, they will say, oh, that school is the white flight school. Some people call it that. Some people say, oh, it's the hip and groovy school, you know, where the children of the hipsters go, you know, the artists, the creative industries types. And then you get the other schools that are left with, you know, people who might not be so hip and groovy, you know, the poorer people and people who are from migrant backgrounds who traditionally moved into the area for the sort of factory work and, you know, more industrial jobs. So, you know, just within that one suburb, you can see this quite stark polarisation happening.
Well, it is intriguing, because when we talk about gentrification, and I guess we talk about Australian society, there are certain this certain pride of multiculturalism in parts of Sydney that consider themselves hip and groovy and on the way up. In your article that you've written, you've touched on this idea of everyday multiculturalism being sought after by gentrifiers. Can you explain to us what that means?
Yeah, so everyday multiculturalism is the idea that in your everyday life, you're mixing with people from all over the place, and just, you know, either at work, at school, and these kinds of daily encounters, you know, on the streets, where it becomes a completely normal thing to be interacting with people from different cultural backgrounds. That's the kind of genuine lived multiculturalism that I think a lot of people in Australia would really value. Unfortunately, what happens with gentrification is that it actually ends up decreasing that everyday multiculturalism, because property prices are pushed up so much that poorer people can't afford to live there anymore. So some of our schools that we have looked at, I don't think you could really say that there was a lot of that everyday multiculturalism. And so we came up with this other term. It's actually, we're borrowing Ghassan Haj's term. He's an Australian anthropologist, and he coined this term cosmo-multiculturalism, which is what he calls multiculturalism without migrants. And it's where, in his words, it's basically when white people consume a cultural difference. So that's the kind of multiculturalism where you hear people say, oh, we love living in X suburb, you know, because there's so many Thai restaurants or, you know, whatever. And that's the kind of multiculturalism that they like. It's about consumption, not necessarily about having multicultural friends, for instance.
The way it strikes me when we talk about these different schools, you know, the school that's really hip and fantastic and might have these examples of everyday multiculturalism people want to consume, and then we have the other schools that are rough, it kind of seems like you're inferring that the the hipsters, the people flocking to these, the Anglo-Australians sort of flocking to these gentrified areas are looking for the right kind of multicultural people, but not necessarily a whole subsection of multicultural. It's kind of like going to a Thai restaurant but not wanting to eat anything too spicy.
Yeah, that's it. That's a perfect analogy, really. I mean, a lot of people say they like to move into these areas because they really value that cosmopolitan lifestyle. They associate it with cultural diversity, you know, the ethnic cuisine, all that sort of thing. But in terms of their children, you know, sometimes they might not want that those kind of values to necessarily risk, you know, quote unquote, risk their children's future by sending them to the local school that's full of, you know, that is very, very mixed. So sometimes that diversity does stop at the school gate.
Well, when we look here at the situation in Sydney, gentrification has a complicated relationship with Sydney, but generally seen as a good thing, as refurbishing these run-down, previously used, these previous warehouse and factory kind of areas. But when it does occur in these areas where it is traditionally migrant-dominated, do we see the displacement of these ethnic communities?
Well, I think you can. I mean, if you look at, you just have to look at census statistics, for example, you know, like over a 10-year period, that some of these inner city, inner western areas have gone from being very culturally mixed and migrant dominated to being now Anglo-Australian dominated. The incomes have gone up, the levels of people's jobs have gone up, the property prices have gone up. So you do see a displacement, and that's something that you see all around the world. In fact, you know, it's not unique to Australia at all.
Mm. Well, Christine, thank you very much for joining us. An interesting one to unpack, that one, actually, and might give us something to think about the next time we sort of head out on the town and, you know, want to rub shoulders with all the exotic people and the exotic food here in Sydney as Anglo-Australians. And maybe give us a little bit more food for thought.
Great. Thanks, Sean.